Sam Hargrave, how are you, buddy?
I am most excellent, Scott. Thank you for having me on your show.
Most excellent. No, thank you, sir. Thank you for being here. Sam Hargrave is a stuntman, a stunt coordinator, a filmmaker, a second unit director, and now with Extraction being your first feature, a massive Hollywood director, because Extraction was a huge, huge hit on Netflix, right? The biggest Netflix film done yet.
Yeah, that's what they tell me. They said, I think it was over almost 100 million views on Netflix, which who knows how you monetize that or say popular versus not. But a lot of people clicked on the movie. A lot of people watched it. The feedback has been overwhelmingly positive. So not a whole lot more you could ask for as a director that people watch and like your movie. So I'm very happy.
It was a fantastic movie. I absolutely loved it, right up my street. But we go back a long way, don't we? Because we met in 2008 in Sydney on X-Men Origins Wolverine.
Yeah, we did. That was, 2008. That's making me feel old, Scott.
Me too. But we spent a good 10 weeks together, got to know each other quite well. And then he went off and became like the main man at Marvel. And left me behind doing my low-budget movies. But, you know, I wasn't going to bring it up, but now I have.
Now that you have, he's like, yeah, I remember. Those were the days, man. I remember I was trying desperately to come even close to some of the physical feats that you were doing in the gym or even on set doing the work you were doing. I was always kind of a little better suited to be the guy who came in to make you look good, getting my butt kicked.
And Hogwash. I don't know. Obviously, this is Dan Stevens there. You were in this video. This was in Sydney when we were prepping for my fight in Wolverine, right?
Yeah, it's where we first met.
Our honeymoon.
Yeah, exactly.
There you are.
And you'll see. Yeah, I'll end up in a lot of these different places with the strange looking facial hair, getting kicked in the chest or faced or flipping upside down and making. Yeah. You look at you, look at that shock.
Oh, young and bendy.
Back hair, yeah, exactly. And flippy and bouncy. And
look at this one, though. Hang on, look at this one.
Bang. Yep, boom. And that's what, you know, I love doing is hanging in there and, like, you know, taking the hits and making the heroes look cool. I love it.
You're good with that one.
Whenever I watched all those Hong Kong movies, that was what I was drawn to for some reason. Like, I loved watching Jackie Chan or Jet Li, but I was more fascinated, honestly, by the fall guys, the people who were getting hit and taking the big falls, because without them, all the stuff that Jackie or Jet or, you know, Sammo or Yuen Biao, all those guys did. I mean, you for example, the guys that do, you know, take the cool moves, makes you look amazing. And so I always, for some reason, was drawn to them. And that was where I kind of wanted to put my energy and time of and creative juices.
But you're a good actor as well, Sam. Whenever I've seen you deliver lines in, you know, some of the smaller stuff you've done or in something like Atomic Blonde, it's always been like, oh, Sam can deliver a line, man. He's a good actor. So, you know, did you ever toy with the acting or anything like that?
I mean, you know, to be perfectly honest, yeah, I came out to Los Angeles. I wanted to be Scott Adkins, meaning I wanted to be the lead of these movies. And, you know, and that's what I was training for. Like, it's all curls for the girls. It was like to look good, do all the cool moves. And then I think it was, I'm trying to think of that in a moment, but I know it became very clear to me fairly early on that acting, at least a kind of the level, like in my mind, that I wanted to do was so subjective, right? Like, other people were in control of my destiny because maybe I was too short. Maybe I wasn't as handsome as Scott Adkins, or maybe my kick wasn't quite as high. And that then had really not a lot to do with my skills. And so that kind of hit me of like, wow, I enjoy like the stunt side of it. I know I can fall. I know I can like do that. I know how tough I am. I know I can outwork anybody to get my skills better. But at a certain point, you know, acting becomes subjective and it's somebody else's choice to give you the job or not. And I was like, eh. So I kind of didn't give it up because, like you said, I still did some small parts in bigger movies, larger parts in smaller movies. And so I still love performing. And one day, fans, this is like it, we're putting it out there. I'm putting it out there. Scott Adkins and I will be in a movie together before we get too old to kick and punch and beat each other up. We will do it. We've talked about it for 12 years, the last 12 years, man, since we met, exactly. We've talked about doing it, but we just haven't yet. But we will. We're gonna.
That's the plan. It's gonna happen.
It
But
is.
having just
It's
said
gonna
that
happen.
about acting business being so subjective and all the power being in the person that may potentially give you a job or not. Now with the shoe on the other foot, having directed a movie and gone through the casting process, how was that experience for you? And did it open your eyes in terms of, oh, it's not as simple as maybe as I thought it was?
Yeah, well, it kind of, in a way, unfortunately, reinforced that because it becomes about show business, and actually, I mean, I don't know if you ever heard that from him, but J.J. Perry always used to say that to me was, hey, it's not show friends, it's show business. And so, unfortunately, there's people that, like, I would love to get jobs to put in these roles, but then that's the friend side of it, show friends. The show business side is maybe just like I might have got looked over because of skin color or height or hair color. Sometimes to service the story and the character, you got to make a choice that's better for the business. Or maybe there's a, you need this person who has, for some reason, a bigger following, has a, a name. And so you're making decisions for business. And that can be, and again, that's frustrating, but, as a director, you got to understand the compromise between art and commerce, because at the end of the day, yes, we're making art, but it's a business. That's why people invest in your movies. That's why they want you to come back and make another movie, is you are a commodity. You bring them money. So it's business. And it, that side of it can be a little bit of a slap in the face to the artist in us, but it's the reality.
Okay, Sam. So if you don't mind, can you educate the viewers to what your martial arts background is, please, and how that led to you getting into the stunt world briefly?
Definitely. Well, briefly, I did martial arts and got into stunts.
A bit more, maybe. Just
Okay,
a tad.
a little more detail. Got it. I started martial arts when I believe I was 14 years old. I was inspired. I kind of grew up, with an older sister, younger brother, and we grew up on a farm. And a lot of my influences, truthfully, were Westerns and those kind of movies. But then we got into, and I will never forget, I think it was on, Channel 28 at the time when we had TV coming in. We would watch Hercules, The Legendary Journey, starring Kevin Sorbo, or Xena, Warrior Princess, starring Lucy Lawless. And, that kind of, they always had a little fight in there, and we would mess around like that. And then my sister really loved Xena. She started taking night classes at a community college, and my mother said, you need to learn a self-defense. And she was like, okay. So my mom went, found these martial arts classes, got some kind of a Christmas deal, like 10 for the price of five, whatever, paid for them. And then my sister, she, as a, young teenage girl does, she's like, I'm not wearing those pajamas. I'm not doing that. But my mom was like, well, kids, we've paid for these. Someone is going to take these martial arts classes. And so with the image of, Hercules and Aeolus kicking butt, I was like, I'll do it. And so I went, and the first class, I would just fell in love with it. And I think part of it was there was a woman, a very, for a 14-year-old boy, a very attractive woman who was doing, spin kicks and breaking boards and high kicks and like doing the splits. And I was like, this might be for me. So, I stayed, but then very quickly, the discipline side of things and the physical challenge of things, all the push-ups and the, knuckle push-ups, and we were like, oh my gosh, my knuckles hurt, but I love it. Or you do something and they're like, do this punishment, like Pogo. We had to like put our hands behind our back and, make a tripod with our feet and in our head. And like, it was like, whoa, all this punishment stuff. So you learn very quickly, like, how to be a good student. And then,
Sorry to interrupt. What was the martial art?
Taekwondo was how I started. And it was, just a, and actually, this will segue into kind of getting me started in the movie business in a way, in two different ways. But it was Taekwondo, and just kind of your run of the mill. It was Olympic style, so it was full contact sparring, and I really enjoyed that as well. Get out some of that teenage aggression. And, you know, then I started to be introduced slowly to Bruce Lee and his films and books and philosophies. And then, you know, Jackie Chan, Jet Li, and I ate that stuff up. It, for my little brain, you know, it was like, oof, this is, I've been craving this. And then, you know, of course, for us little white guys, Van Damme was big, Chuck Norris. So I'd go around like kicking the refrigerator and trying to do the splits, but, you know, couldn't really. But it became, you know, it became kind of an obsession, and all the training, and it was really something that was a huge part of my life. And that was where the one influence was the Hong Kong action cinema, because it became something that I studied almost religiously. I mean, more so than most religions. Like very, like I would, you know, when I went to school, I ended up going to University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, and I studied martial arts at the same place. And I lived at the dojo. Dojang, they call it. And I would, you know, clean the place, teach kids classes in order to
Oh, you
live there
literally
for
live there.
free.
Sorry. You literally live
Literally lived.
I literally lived in the studio, in the martial arts studio, as an intern, cleaning the place, teaching classes. And then my routine, when I would wake up in the morning, like train, I would put in, like I had all my, VHS collection of Jackie Chan movies and Jet Li movies, and I'd put in a VHS queued up, to the fight scene I wanted, and I would watch it while I ate breakfast. Then I'd stop it, rewind it so that it was ready for the next time, put it back on the shelf. I'd bike to work, or not to work, sorry, to school. I'd do my classes. I'd have a lunch break. I'd bike back, put in another tape. I'd watch it and eat lunch. I'd queue it back up, put it back in. And then I'd go to class again, come back for dinner, like breakfast, lunch, and dinner, three times every day. For the, years that I was at school, I was watching these fight scenes. And then, my friends and I would try to then emulate them, and we had, cameras, and we would do it. And then the side of the film side of it was my, just circumstantially, my martial arts instructor, Donald Whittier, was a kind of an independent filmmaker. He had some money, like, the family, and he's like, hey, I love martial arts, but I want to get into film. So he, wrote, directed, produced a terrible script. Sorry, Donald, it's the truth. called Dog Nights. And he asked if I wanted to. Yeah, it was just this dark comedy, really weird, zany. He's a very interesting guy. But it was my first foray into the making of movies, because he asked, I was 16 years old. He said, would you like to be an intern on this process? Because, it was like a micro budget, $200,000 maybe or something. But he brought people in from LA, brought a couple actors, brought the DP, and I worked as a grip. And so I was, putting up flags, laying cable, moving sandbags, just doing the behind the scenes, the getting it done. And my eyes were just open to, like, wow, this is how movies are made. I gotta know more about this. And so that led to investigating film school and now martial arts, and then also the performing arts. Like, I was doing drama and acting stuff, because I did like live shows, these Western theme park shows in at Tweetsie Railroad, where I was a cowboy. And
What age?
as a summer
What
job,
age, son?
it was like 18, 19 when I did the internship on film when I was like 16, 17. And then, like, I was still doing the drama classes, and then I found a job as a performer at this live show. So now the performing is coming in, the filmmaking side of it's coming in, the martial arts is still there. So it's just starting to build this, this perfect storm of a filmmaker. And this is all happening in North Carolina. And so then I'm in college, and I'm making these films that are always based on action. I'm usually either starring in them and or bribing my friends to star in them so that I could get them to do the work, and I would be the guy who gets beat up. And I would end up doing the stunts. Like, I would, the big climax of getting hit by a car, or you climb the thing and they fight and they fall off the balcony, into the boxes, and I would always be the stunt guy doing the big things.
So you're doing
And
the
then when it
stunts for
came,
the other actors.
even back in, my college days, when I didn't really know, what I wanted to do. I knew I wanted to make movies, but in my understanding of making movies, that was just what Jackie Chan did. Like, you had to do it all: write it, direct it, produce it, act in it, do the stunts, edit it. That was making movies.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until my good friend and second unit director on extraction, Thayer Harris, told me, he took me aside and he's like, "Hey, we're talking about future and what am I going to do after I graduate? I want to make movies, but how?" He goes, "You're really good at falling on your head. There is a career out there for you possibly, and it's called being a stuntman. You should try it." And that was it. Like, I was like, "Yep, that's perfect."
And so I literally, like my Civic that's parked right out there, I loaded it up with, my worldly possessions. My dad and I drove across the country and I went to Hollywood and just, I looked up and it was the DP, Ad Santel, who shot some of these videos for Donald, my Taekwondo instructor, these video movies. And I slept on his couch for like 3 or 4 weeks while I tried to find an apartment and like get a job and do all the things that when you're in LA, just, I didn't even do that much thinking, just kind of went for it. It's crazy. So that was not really a short introduction.
But you get
No,
an AI,
no.
you got the
I
you
was
got the one
completely
degree.
wrapped up in it. So I know this wasn't one of your first things, but I thought it'd be interesting for people to see that you were in blood and bone.
I was.
There you are.
Oh, there it
Michael
is.
Jai White is dishing it out.
Yeah.
That's some good acting there, look, pretending that Michael Jai White can beat you up.
I know. Look at that. Just gets me in the old reverse arm bar and oh.
That was early on. That was J.J. Perry. He was really good to me early in my career. It took a liking to me. Who knows why? Maybe because of our Taekwondo history. But he gave me some opportunities on some fun movies, and that was Blood and Bone with Michael Jai White, and threw me in there. And I helped choreograph a lot of the fights for that movie,
Yeah.
and then threw myself in there, to get on camera and show off my acting skills. I don't know.
If you had told me all you wanted was grated cheese and tomatoes, I would have just made you grated cheese and tomatoes.
Why does it matter how you disseminate it? Get over it.
So this is something you did with Monique Ganderton. And it's a fight sequence. Well, it's a short film, but you shot the whole thing with just the two of you, right? Either she was holding the camera,
Yes.
you were holding the camera, or a tripod was holding the camera, or some sort of, by the looks of it, zip line.
Yeah, we did this was be this came out of this 7-layer dip idea was based on an actual argument that we had because we were dating at the time, and she made a 7-layer dip. And I scooped off, the top layers to me. I was working my way. I had an excuse. I was working my way down to, it was hard to take all of it on one chip. Come on, I got to work my way down. But her was like, "Look, if you're going to take it, it's called 7-layer dips. So you can get all 7 layers." So that was the backdrop. And then we couldn't find, we were on this movie. We were actually shooting Trespass in New Orleans. No, sorry, Shreveport, Louisiana. And directed by the late Joel Schumacher, who was awesome. And we were on the show and we were trying to work on our fight skills, but nobody wanted to help us. Like, it was on the weekends and we're working all week and we're getting banged up, and then we're like, "Hey, let's do this on the weekend." And everybody was like, "Nah, I'm gonna hang out with my family," understandably, or "No, I'm gonna go go to the movies," or whatever. And we're like, "Well, if no one will help us shoot this, we're gonna do it ourselves." And so we did. So like here, any of these close, when the camera's moving, most of the times here, I'll shoot her single, she would shoot my single. But then here, anytime the camera's locked off, it's on a tripod. But then we did, just to try to outdo ourselves, yeah, like this one here.
How'd you
We're
do
like,
that?
how do we keep the, this interesting so it looks like it's, someone else is shooting it? And so we took the camera, we built a zip line and a system of pulleys, hooked the camera up to it, had a like a an ankle weight to give it some oomph as it came down. And then we'd pull it back to number one, and we had like a we painted this this piece of string green so that you couldn't see it moving through the grass, because I would hold it, get number one, and then on action I would let it go, and then the line would be snaking through the grass, and we'd start fighting as the camera whooshed down, and then we'd we'd retrieve it and we would look at playback and be like, wow, that was terrible. It's pointing, you know, towards the sky. Let's do it again. And some of these took, when the camera was moving, some of those took 20, 30, 40 times to get it right. But it was, you know, it was just our time. So we were like, hey, let's do it again. We just do it again. And so, but what it really kind of proved a number of things to me. One, we were so passionate about, you know, storytelling and making movies. And in this moment, obviously comedic dance, but so passionate about it that it, you don't need much, you know, especially, you know, this was in 2010, I think maybe 2011. And, you know, the video cameras and editing software have only improved leaps and bounds since then. And you, you know, you don't need much. You can shoot an entire movie on your cell phone now and, you know, just put it up on a tripod. Like these crazy selfie sticks with 360 GoPro, you know, there's amazing tools. So, you know, for me, I talk to the young filmmakers, if you want to make films, if you want to do that, there's nothing that should hold you back because the technology is right there at your fingertips, even if you don't have a camera crew.
It's one of those ones where you need to know the background of how it was shot to really appreciate it. You know what I mean? And it, it works, absolutely. It's a fight sequence that works. But when you know that it was only the two of you shooting, it's that much better. It's the same as the very first Peter Jackson movie, Bad Taste. I remember everyone raving about it, and I watched it, and I was a bit like, yeah, you know, whatever. But when you learn that he just made it with his mates, suddenly it's like, wow, this is incredible.
Exactly. It's kind of, and it's funny, we, I continue, the story, right? Like the mystery or the legend, the mystique, whatever it is, the story that leads to or is behind the thing is, makes it or breaks it. Like a lot of what, you know, in Extraction, truthfully, sure, you watch it and it's exciting, the Warner that we did, but the knowledge that I shot all of it and that I was strapped to cars and jumping off buildings for some reason takes it to like, whoa, now people look at it differently and it takes on a life of its own. So I've learned that early on that it is very important. That's the kind of the marketing, the business side of things is like putting, attaching a story to, you know, what you're doing really helps sell it. It just, you know, we love stories as human beings. We love stories. So a story within a story is just another layer of enjoyment for people when they watch this stuff.
Same reason we keep going back to see Jackie Chan. I mean, especially in his heyday, you know, knowing he's doing all his own stunts, you know, it's happening with Tom Cruise at the moment. He's doing these crazy death-defying things. It's part of the what sells you to get in the Cineplex when life is normal again. So,
Yeah, exactly.
You know, Sam, I was the same as you, man. When I was a teenager, when I was 12 years old, my dad got me a camcorder and I just started to make movies with my mates. And I did it till the age of about 25, and I've got hours and hours of VHS footage at home that I don't have on the internet, luckily for me.
I would love to see that.
I'm a big fan of this. I think it's really good. You're in Germany, right?
Yeah, this was, I guess, 2014, maybe? 13 or 14. But we were in Germany and working with this German stunt team. And they, you know, they had the idea. I helped John write it. And then they directed it. And I just kind of, you know, had some ideas. But it was just a lot of fun to work with those guys. And they've made a feature film, Plan B, I think it's called.
Very talented, amazing guys. Amazing guys, real talent for all of them. And whoever shot this did a bloody great job. I'm going to play it.
Yeah.
Now, this bit here is brilliant. I've got to tell you that this is brilliant. I love the choreography, and I love the way the camera moves, and everything just works perfectly. Bang! Come on!
Yeah.
That is brilliant.
But it's why, I think it's, again, it's why, the reason that you can appreciate this and like it, and the same reason people love, I love watching your movies, we like watching Jackie Chan movies, or The Raid, or, you know, nowadays with John Wick, is when you're watching, when you're not cutting away and hiding inadequacies, or, I mean, not that, you know, I don't have inadequacies, like, if you watch my wrists, I'll turn back when I kick, but anyway, if you, you know, if you're watching the actor do the gags, it really pulls you in. And it, you know, if it, so I think that's why, again, that's why you're so successful the way you do, because it's not, you're not cutting away to a stunt double, you're doing it. Yeah. And like in that piece that, you know, I was doing it, you know, now in Extraction, a lot of that, the Warner, I mean, 95% of that Warner, it's Chris Hemsworth doing it. And that's, I think people love that. Seeing the actor, seeing the guy or the girl do those stunts is really powerful. And I think, you know, I think that's why you respond, my opinion of why you respond to that clip.
It's two things. It's because, yes, we're seamlessly going from the guy delivering the line into him kicking the crap out of four or five guys. But it's just, I mean, it's a simple camera movement, but it's perfect, man. And just the way you pop that spinker cap at the end, I think it's bloody brilliant. Let's watch it again.
Well, thanks.
I really think it's good.
Thanks, buddy. Well, I appreciate it. I mean, to have someone like you critique my, or enjoy work that I've done, I mean, it's usually me going crazy about how solid all your stuff is.
Mate, that is some of the best stuff I've ever seen. Ever. And I don't know what it is. I think it's brilliant. I do know
well,
what it is.
Hey, maybe, I mean, this may be, again, part of why, you know, when I watch it, what I'm seeing, and again, seeing with your stuff, is, again, it's not just someone doing crazy moves, because there's a lot of people that can do a lot of crazy moves. There's acting behind the moves.
Yeah.
And so it's maintaining that, you know, in this case, the ferocity, you know?
Yes, the ferocity, the viciousness of the techniques. I really respond to that. That's what I like about it, as well as the flash and the style.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And here they are. There's the filmmakers. There's John and Fong and all the guys from Germany that was in Cha. Yeah. Great group of guys. Super talented, these guys.
Yeah, really talented, man. It's a great.
Let me look at this kick. Woo-wah!
Yeah, amazing.
Ooh, look at that close-up. Whee-hee!
Yeah. Proper 80s Hong Kong style. Love it.
Yeah, that's very much, you know, these guys were very into that. And I love that kind of stuff, as you do. And so I very much responded to working with these guys, because it gave that Hong Kong that flair. But with the, you know, I tried to bring a little bit of, because it's funny how, you know, I love that Hong Kong stuff, but I want to try to bring a little bit of vicious, not viciousness, but like intention behind the action, you know, like wherever that character's coming from, try to make sure, you know, that you're bringing that as well. And so that you don't, it doesn't become disconnected from the narrative. The action is related to and moving the narrative forward. And that's something I've always tried to do with action, and had some great mentors in that.
Yes, this is an independent, I mean, I would call this shoestring budget short feature film that these filmmakers, this guy Dennis and Vlad, and there's a lot of guys in here that really,
I think, did an amazing job. And what was really crazy is they're, you know, huge Hong Kong fans, and they paid, I think, did a great job paying homage to, you know, this style of action, these characters. But what was so crazy, look how young I look there and hairless. But
good looking, man.
What was so crazy is that they caught me, like, this was over the course of 4 or 5 years that they shot this film.
Really?
And because they would shoot it on the weekends. They all had day jobs. Like, Dennis, like, teaches martial arts, like, has his own Hapkido school. Like, you know, Vlad's doing his thing. Everyone had their own lives. And, you know, I was working. I was off doing stunts. So we did this as a chunk, like this part of the movie we did as one piece. And then I came back and did, you know, a number of other ones, 3 or 4 different times. And what was so crazy, I mean, looking at me now, is my look would change so dramatically depending on who I was doubling or if I wasn't working. And they just happened to catch me at these, you know, these times throughout my career over the course of 4 years where I looked the same, had, like, you know, I was shaven, short hair. One piece in the middle of the movie that, you know, my hair is longer and a little lighter, and you can kind of see we fudged that pretty good. But all of these ideas, we were there choreographing, and they're very, yeah, that one, how's that on your shins? All of these were my ideas. Part of what I would do, and I just prided myself in on indie sets or on big movie sets, I would, as we would be there, and if the fight was choreographed, great. If not great, I would go to the set and look for, like, what is the gnarliest gag we can do in this space? I want that gag. So here, you know, safely, you know, like, yes, I could have climbed to the top of these things and done, you know, hurt myself. But like, what can I do in my skill sets? What can I do here? And this one, like, I'd worked with, you know, done some wire stuff. And I was big on, you know, the dead man. So in this, we just overlapped. I brought my harness, hooked up a wire, and just, you know, we did the Hong Kong overlap where he starts to throw me in one shot. And then I just run as fast as I can and leap at this, you know, metal cylinder. And the wire stops me dead in my tracks and just is a pretty dramatic ending for that character that's been given, you know, Vlad's character so much grief.
Yeah, the dead man looks painful. You got to have a good vest for that, right?
Yeah, that was a climbing sutra, a spectra, like, I think it was a mixture of a titanium spectra mix. And so, yeah, it's tight and it's got to be, you know, it's got to be a well-made vest to get that sharp, you know, violent end. And then that back three quarter onto the stairs, that was one that I had always wanted to do and inspired by Jackie's people. And we just found it. And it was like, hey, you know, why not just, because that's something that I love about those movies and I miss, truthfully, about many kind of modern action movies. And as much as I love The Raid, this is where my critique of it would be, that, you know, there's a certain
rhythm, a certain punctuation to a fight scene in the Hong Kong cinema, like especially Jackie Chan. It'd be fight, 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 big gag, recover, you know, fight, 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 gag that you remember. Whereas for me, The Raid was a lot of fight, 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 fight. And next thing you know, you're like, wow, it's a lot of fighting.
So this, what I tried to, it's all amazing. There's a place for it. And it is amazing. And I like it. But what I try to do, like when I'm designing stuff, but this I think shows it, is that you're building, you got to build to a climax, like to your exclamation point, and put little punctuations in there. So you'll see, you know, where there's one kick in the head and the hit against the thing. And now the tide is starting to turn. We make punctuations to where the story changes and there's a turn for the character. And so then now he's getting beaten down a little more. Big kick, boom, big gag. And then you bring back, there's a line, you bring back a line that he'd set up earlier, you know, me teasing him about being, you know, overweight or something. You're still fat. And then he won't give up. He gives him the line, which now makes him react. And now he does something even bigger. So it's all these gags are related to story. And then for me as a viewer, that's what makes them memorable, is you connect them to the experience of your character, the hero or villain or both. And that's how you punctuate the scene rather than just a bunch of fight, fight, fight that, not to say no one remembers or cares about, because, you know, specialists and super fans love it, but the general public doesn't really identify with it because a kick's a kick's, punch, punch. And now when you've done 50 of them, they're like, I don't know what's happening. Yeah, but if you do a couple moves and then boom, big, memorable, oh my gosh, that sticks with people. And so that's how I try to design action. And that, you know, I think we did a good job in that movie.
Oh man, you know, it's so funny. Like this one knocked me unconscious. Kind of see my head bounce there off the floor. To get that, like for those, if we're going to dig deep, to get that, to achieve that look, and I did it with Hugh Jackman. He was running in from the opposite side. And we spoke about the dead man before, like where you tie off, take a static line, tie it off to your vest and a solid point behind you, and you run full speed. And this, it only picked it up at the last, you know, the last moment, and then they cut away, annoyingly, but is, I ran as fast as I could, had about 30 feet of, you know, running space. I ran, I leapt off an apple box. So I was, you know, I was up there. I was high in the air, and Hugh took me out of the air and I slammed down on the back of my head. And I remember being, you know, the flash. The first thing I heard was just JJ Perry's voice being like, keep going, keep going. And then I, you know, came out of it and just tried to grab him. And I had no idea where I was or what I was doing. And I was like, woo. I got back up, walked to number one, and was just kind of like in a daze because I was still seeing stars. I didn't know where I was. I would just walk back. I knew I had to do it again, or I thought I did. So I walked back to number one. I just stood there, you know, And I remember JJ being like, "Nope, we're done. You're not doing that again." And I was like, "What? Did we get it? Did we get it?"
You're crazy guys, man. They cut into it too much, don't they? They don't show the full force. They don't show the full. You don't see the glory of it. It's a shame.
No. Yeah. It's a real shame. I think you and I share our passion for what we would term proper action editing, or effective, not proper. There's no, I mean, that's what's so interesting about this, right? There's no right and wrong. It's just different opinions, different styles, and that's art. But there is, I think, less and more effective ways to put together an action scene. And that, in my opinion, for what we did and the impact of it, it's less effective. And if you kind of, compare and contrast that with what you showed before, like the indie movie, Unlucky Stars, you know, the gags, they didn't cut out of it. And now part of the reason you can do that is all of the performers were the actors and the stuntmen. So you're not having to hide anything.
But you're not having to go back to the money. It's the back of your head. You're not going to see that it's true. Not Liev Schreiber. But still,
it's they true.
So cool.
But you see what they did is that, and it's so hard. You can't argue this with the, you know, because I trust me, I spent years at Marvel in these in-depth arguments, and I love all of them. Love Jeff Ford; he's an amazing editor. Jeff, I love you; you're an amazing editor. But my opinion was always very strong that there were missed opportunities to have both, which is great. Acting, great comedic moments, and amazingly effective action. Because I can understand why, you know, having been edited my own movie, you want to be like, it's about the emotion and it's about the character. So you want to be with them. But I think, so, you know, in that moment, they didn't cut to right away to the close up of Schreiber. They cut to a closer shot of Jackman. So feeling what that was like for him. Now, I think if you would have given that, you could have given that another, you know, little while. You could have given it a couple more frames. See, they go down here,
yeah.
And the guy who the story is about, Hugh Jackman, boom, you see the hit. Now you go to the guy. And so I can understand that logic. I understand it. I'm not arguing for it. I don't think it works. I think you can have both, which is just hang in that wide shot a little longer, feel it, let the audience like watch it. And once you go, cut away.
Yeah.
But let them have that. Otherwise you're robbing the audience of that experience.
Well, it's not just that they cut out of it. It's a Jackman too quick. They also cut into it too late because you want to see the dead stop. And then your head, you've knocked yourself unconscious. Can we please see the hard work that went into that? I mean, I know what you're saying, exactly. And it's a tightrope and people like things to be cut quick. Some people like it that way. And in the Marvel movies, it's that way as well. And I love the Russo brothers. And I'm absolutely taken in their pizza film school every week like it's, heroin. But they cut quick as well. Or is it Marvel? I don't know. But, you know.
Yeah, it's. I think part of it, truthfully, it's a stylistic choice. It evokes a different kind of feeling.
Doesn't the success of John Wick and Extraction prove that we are correct?
I can't argue with you there. I think you're absolutely right. You're right.
Yeah.
I guess being put political, meaning I understand why I understand why they make those choices. And there are certain times I've made similar choices. Even in Extraction, there were times where I wanted to live a little longer and things, but you're like, you know what? Let's just move along. But in general, like, yes, John Wick, Atomic Blonde, and then Extraction, we did that. We basically took action how we like it to be seen or felt or experienced and gave that to people. And you're exposing yourself in a way because you're saying, this is what I love. I think we talked about that earlier. Like, this is what I love. Now I'm counting on, I'm risking or betting that other people are going to like this as well. It may not be how a lot of other people are cutting it, but I love it. So I'm going to put it out there. And then the response being overwhelmingly positive, you're like, oh, well, I guess I wasn't wrong. Other people appreciate that too.
Well, I think as a director, you have to make the film that you want to make, right? You can't predict what the audience wants to see. I think when you start trying to predict, and I'm not a director, I'm just, this is what I think. If you start trying to predict what people want to see, you'll end up making something that's not that good, you know?
Yep.
You can only make a film for yourself, right?
Yeah, that was something that I learned. I mean, I had many great mentors, but one in relating to this topic, David Leitch, when we were doing Atomic Blonde, we had this kind of motto that was bold choices. We even made a t-shirt and said bold choices.
Yeah, man.
Because that's, you know, you put out there, it was with the Warner and Atomic Blonde. A lot of people didn't want us to do it. I mean, even the Warner Extraction, which is crazy. I've proven before, like we did Atomic Blonde. People loved it. People raved about it. So I wanted to take that and go bigger with Extraction. And it was a bold choice because one, you know, I'd done it before. So like, how do I make it a little different? Two, you know, it's not really, the Russos hadn't, like they're producing this movie and their names are attached. So people might be expecting a certain thing. And, you know, and three, it's like, how do you tell all these different perspectives? But I really thought it was the right choice. And I fought for it in production. I fought for it in post-production. Like it wasn't a guarantee. It's funny. People like, because people equate the success of Extraction kind of with that action set piece, it was not a sure thing. And to, I mean, even in the editing room for a couple of months, it was still like, no, we need to cut it up. We need to cut it up or go back and get coverage. And I was like, hey, I mean, we took a risk. We swung for the fences. Now, in this case, either we missed and you got to start from scratch and go all over again, or give me a little more time. And because it's all about sound design and the pacing and the visual effects. Once I get the whole thing, give me a second. I want to see it and feel it. And then finally, and to their credit, like they, once they saw the fully realized vision, they were like, yeah, this works. And I was like, whew, that bold choice paid off. Yeah, but it was, you know, I sweat on it for months, many months.
I think you're better off being bold and risking it and going for it. And to crash and burn wildly is better than to just hedge your bets, play it safe and be kind of like, meh. And then if you succeed in that bold choice, then the reward is going to be much greater, isn't it? I made a bold choice recently when I played Avengement. And that character, I decided to go for an extremely bold choice with the help of Jesse Johnson. With the teeth, the shaved head, the scars. A lot of things that we did with that movie was very bold. And it paid off. I mean, people look at that performance and go, well, that's one of your best performances there, Scott, if not the best. It was a bold choice, so I completely hear what you're saying.
Yeah, I agree, by the way. I think you and Jesse did a great, that movie was one of my favorite that you've done because it's, and not that other movies aren't this way, but because it was the action in that movie, which was awesome, nominated for a Taurus World Stunt Award, was, yes, and deservedly so because, this is full circle here, is because you made that bold choice and the choices were based in character, that came out in the action. And so I thought even though, you know, it wasn't some of the craziest spins or flips you've done, I thought that was some of your best action because you feel it the most. Yeah. And all that is rooted in that bold choice to make, to go into the character, take that to a place that's very bold and very, you know, it's very committed. And that shows itself in the action. And yeah, I think it is one of your best movies. So hats off to you. Bold choices.
This is one of my more favorite fights. Captain America, Winter Soldier is a brilliant movie. I love what the Russos did with it.
It was really kind of a fairy tale experience with Marvel or a, you know, comic book experience, if you will. And this fight kind of marks one of the, and I wouldn't quite call it the high, this was in early stages, truthfully. Like my first foray with them was on the first Avengers film with the Joss Whedon directed one that put Avengers on the map. And then this was, you know, my second film with him. And this was my first film with the Russos. And this fight was really fun. I mean, to work with this team that, you know, James Young, you know, choreographing this fight, and Aaron Tony and Chris Brewster, and, you know, a lot of great minds putting this thing together. But I got to double Chris in this. He did a lot of it, but what was really fun, or they gave us what they wanted, the Russos, was a movie. It was kind of like an action movie and a 70s thriller all wrapped up into one. And again, that it kind of harkens to what we just constantly keep talking about is character, you know, the action being character driven. And so that's what we tried to do here, is really reveal things about the characters through action and give, like, you know, give the audiences something hopefully with new fun and fresh, and then keep the intensity high. Now, this, to be fair, we talked about this as well. Some of the editing, some of the choppy editing in this is not my favorite. I mean, I do love the fight and the energy is great. I would have lived in some of the moments a little more. Still, like they got some cool moments. We got to do some really cool stuff. Martial arts heavy too. Like if you like this here, this jump back kick, I got to do a little back to my roots of Taekwondo of ha. And then we threw in some judo here because that was stuff that we were all playing with, you know, while Chad and his team were working on John Wick. So we tried to pay homage to that. But the trip with Marvel was really something. And because you're learning about how the big machine works, but also the Russo's allowing you some creative freedom to really, stretch and try things. And a moment of connection with the Russos, and I think they saw kind of a kindred filmmaking spirit, and I saw in them people who were also learning and kind of coming into their own with action. They've been action fans for years, but what's very interesting is I remember, and it's something that they love the skinny shutter, but I remember kind of telling them about 22 frames, like because bringing my kind of Hong Kong background into it and being like, hey, like what if you shot this at 22 frames? You don't have to go as fast and the actors will look, cleaner and faster. And they're like, oh, they tried it and they loved it. So that kind of became one of their things. And we were learning together. Like they had obviously a lot of things to teach me. I thought I brought some things from that kind of Hong Kong studying of film and knowledge of action to the table for them. And it was really cool. And I think they just kind of ticked away in their brain. That was not like, I wasn't like the normal stunt guy who was usually, you go do your thing and then you go back to your trailer and hang out or go sit down at a craft service or whatever. In between setups, I would always be by the monitors just watching and wanting to know, why are they using that lens? Like, why are these guys choosing? It's like, oh, that's an interesting choice. I'm just thinking, how are they going to use that? How is this going to blend with what we've shot before? And just learning. So I'm soaking it up and having these experiences and knowing that at some point it's going to, pay off. Not knowing that eventually, Joe Russo would have a script that he'd written that he would offer me and I would go on to direct as my first movie. But I knew there was something there. The connection was strong. And, it was really great to work with like-minded filmmakers who were collaborative and I think the main thing I learned from them on that and throughout my time with them was they were very strong advocates of the idea that the best idea wins.
Yeah.
Regardless of who it comes from, where it comes from, the best idea wins. And I've tried to incorporate that in my filmmaking, as well, so that it really keeps you open to not being so, it wasn't my idea, so we're not doing it. Why? Because it's my movie. Like, I'm the director. Because somebody, an actor might come with an idea you've never thought of. And you'd be like, whoa, that's crazy. Or it might come from your assistant who has seen it from a different perspective, or it might come from, there's a balance. You don't want to, because I like to have an open dialogue with the crew and people, but you don't want everyone like bringing you suggestions because then it's madness. But from your trusted people, be open to other ideas outside of your own world, because that can open up some magical doors that you did not know existed or didn't think exploring would have, given that much of a reward.
But you still have to have the good instinct to realize when somebody gives you the best idea. Do you know what I mean?
True.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think to me, that's what directing is. You're steering the ship. There's so many other things that are like involved in making other people making it happen, but you have to be, it's crazy position because you have to be in it enough to feel it and be experiencing it with your actors and with your characters and know when you feel, but also removed enough to be able to see like, oh, here's a good idea over here. Someone brought this, be like, oh, actually that's a really good idea. Let's change this and incorporate it. For example, I'd give two examples. One from Extraction, where in the middle of the Wonder, we were on the rooftop, where he throws the guy over the balcony and they run to the top. And then there's a pause where they see the helicopter, reloads his gun. He has that line where he's like, hey, kid, you trust me? The kid says, no. And then they throw him over.
Yeah.
That wasn't planned. We earlier like that, in the whole thing, we had planned another shootout up top, more guys getting more fighting, more action just to keep it going. But then while we were there, just like, you know, it's like, wow, we've been going for a long time. You step back for a second. It's been relentless action. Let's take a moment and put in a character beat to allow the audience to catch their breath and to learn something more about this relationship that's developing and about the characters. And so that, you know, it was just stepping back and letting it kind of happen and being open to different ideas. What I learned from the Russos and what you're saying, and I agree with, you have to have this level of taste and openness to receive ideas from the outside so that you can say, oh, this is the best idea and it should win, and put it on the screen so people enjoy it.
Yeah. Anyone that is somehow listening to this show that I've got on YouTube and has not checked out the Russo Brothers Pizza Film School, if you're interested in filmmaking, that's one you've definitely got to check out. I watch it. I think it's incredible. I can't believe how many people haven't watched it, to be honest. Moving on to Wolf Warrior 2, which definitely want to talk about. I, of course, played the main villain in Wolf Warrior 1, massive movie over there in China. And then Wolf Warrior 2 went on to become the highest grossing movie in Chinese history. Talk us through, I think you were involved very much so with this underwater section, right, sir?
Yeah, Wolf Warrior 2, that's quite an experience. Now, this particular scene, I got myself in a lot of, it came out cool. We were underwater for, I think, 6 days, shot this in a pool, like an Olympic-sized pool in Beijing. And I actually pitched this to, because we had kind of fresh off of Atomic Blonde, and I love the idea of trying stuff. And the director, actor, writer, Wu Jing here, who's in the white shirt in the scene, he wanted to do this opening on a ship. And my pitch was, hey, let's do it as a Warner. But in my mind, it was going to take place on the ship. And then, in his idea, he was going to be on the ship for like one shot and then in the water. But then when I said that, he goes, oh, that's a great idea. Let's do as a Warner underwater. And I was like, oh, my gosh, what have I done? Yeah, what have I done? But then when I thought about it, I was like, well, this will be an extremely interesting, difficult challenge. And so we did. I mean, we spent 6 days. For most of this stuff, I was right there. I wasn't shooting this one. We had an amazing underwater camera op, like a whole water team from Los Angeles. And this is the guy who, I mean, this guy, he was, as we worked, because we were really at depth and we were working off of tanks. I had a breathing device and I would be under there with him. But this operator, I think Alex was his name. He was incredible. He had the camera and some fins, and he would go to the top when we were ready to shoot. He would take a breath and then just go down and be shooting and swimming around because he didn't want the bubbles to get in the, you know, in the way and give away that he was on air. And he would do these long takes underwater, operating and swimming around just on a single breath. And wow. That was actually one of the most amazing things that I had really ever experienced. And what was cool and super challenging is for all of these performers was, you know, they had to as well go up and take a single breath and then go back down, let the air settle, like the bubbles, and then action. And we only had a certain amount of time, you know, to execute these moves, and then trying to figure out where to put the stitches and how to blend it all together.
It was extremely challenging. And, but again, what, you know, it turned out is a very unique opening to a film, and the film went on to gross, I mean, it was, yeah, the high for a while. I think it's been beaten since, but for at least a couple of years, it was the highest grossing film in Chinese cinema history. And, Wu Jing spent months working with this breath coach and diving coach. And, you know, he could hold his breath down underwater in motion. Because he's not just, you're not statically holding your breath. He's fighting. He's working. Like his heart's pumping. Like he's losing oxygen, and he's down there for, you know, sometimes a minute, 2 minutes, and he had to work for many months practicing these different techniques of, you know, like breathing and meditation, and then like so we'd go down, but able to, you know, because he's not, again, not just fighting underwater on a single breath. He has to act. So he's like, so you can't just have panic in your eyes when you're supposed to be this super cool character. And so I mean it was an incredible experience, and I was very impressed with Wu Jing and his ability to kind of act underwater while fighting. And it was the whole team that helped execute this was incredible. I mean, I designed it and I kind of worked with them to, you know, to make it happen. But the guys that actually did it, it's insane.
Brilliant sequence, really impressive, and yeah, very unique. Haven't seen anything like that. With, I mean, I can think of a James Bond film, scuba diver guys fighting underwater, but nothing as dynamic as that. Brilliant stuff. Sam, if you're doing a fight sequence and it's not a wanna, how many cameras would you prefer to be shooting at once?
You know, it really depends. And I know the purists enjoy, you know, the one camera. And I've done them that way. Truthfully, I try to go with at least two because, but I don't compromise. Like, meaning I have, there's an A camera.
That is what, like, this is how I want to see it.
But I'll usually have a B camera that kind of is like a get out of jail free card. Like, and a lot of this comes from doing second unit. Because doing second unit, it's not my movie. And so I have to cover my bases and be like, get all this different coverage. And so that then it becomes like habit. And it's also a fun, for me, it's a fun challenge, a fun dance. How do I work with the DP to light this set in a way that both cameras look good, but they're not going to get in each other's way? Sometimes it's you can't do that. And you have to just say, hey, everybody back up. This is a one camera shot because this is the only way I see it happening. But then, you know, a lot of times even, you know, in Extraction, like we'd put a second camera on it and it would get the, you know, it would try to focus on certain things that might come in handy. Now, usually I'm using my A camera. That's why I say B camera is like the get out of jail free card, and they'll steal maybe like a good close up. Cause again, if I had endless amount of time and an endless budget, or like if I had like Jackie Chan for the, you know, the Legend of Drunken Master, that final fight scene, if I had 4 months
to shoot the you know, a 15 minute fight scene,
one camera's
I do it single camera. Yeah. That's all you need. No problem.
I'll do 50 takes. But when, you know, when I have like that fight and Extraction, when you've got 2 days, like the one inside the, you know, the tenement fight with all those guys who are coming in, when you've got like 2 days, maybe 3 days to shoot that, you've got to be efficient and you got to move fast, and you can't get into double digit takes. You just got to get it and move on. So you just have to be like, all right, I want this in my A camera, but B camera, like, so we don't have to do a second setup. I know I want an insert of this cup being grabbed because I just want people to know what that is. Or I want this guy on the ground in pain. So let's put the B camera there. And so that we were doing two things at the same time. So I usually shoot with two cameras. If I have the space, like if we're outside, I'll throw a third camera in there. But knowing that, like, don't compromise your A camera. Like, because that is, I would love for it to be just in one camera. And if it goes through my B camera shot, so what? Don't worry. Don't talk to me, B camera. Get what you can. This is the money shot and I want it to work. And this, usually it's a wider camera that's just like the beautiful, I want it, the backlight. Like, but I got that B camera just in case, you know, the time's up and we don't have time to get that other setup. And that comes, I think, from the, you know, the background of second units. But, you know, for most of my stuff, like growing up was all single camera because you couldn't afford two cameras. You know, you get one camera and you're lucky. So that's how I learned. And that's how your A camera is always that within mind. But then I'm like, whoa, I have the money now on a budget of this movie to put two other cameras. I'm going to use them for sure.
That's the same for me because, of course, I don't have the time, and absolutely the B-cam is a safety net, but I'll also use it to lead on to the next shot. So I can be in the middle of a sequence thinking I'm selling the punch for this camera, but then he's rushing in and I've got the B-cam over there and I'm going to make that work for that one because we've got to get the shot done and move on to the next segment. But also it's the safety net of maybe there's a bit of choreography where you can see that it got a bit eggy and you can see that some guy was waiting or whatever. And so we can go to the other angle and just snip a little bit out of it and speed it up and things like that. So I always make sure that B cam is wide enough to not ruin it so that you can't see the motion of what we're actually doing as well.
Yep. No, you're thinking like a filmmaker because, and that's, again, this is the marriage of art and commerce. Like, if we were just artists, I would paint with a single brush. I would take as much time as I needed. I would love to do that. But unfortunately, like, and you more so than me, like, you know, we had considering you probably would have made 3 or 4 of your movies in the time we made Extraction. But like,
oh,
what's
man,
amazing?
When I was on the Marvel movie, it was luxury.
I know, that's what I'm saying, right? Like, it's there's a luxury, like, you know, Marvel, yeah, you got time, you got money, you got time, and Extraction is like, you know, half of that, but then you get like half of that. It's again, it's all the art and commerce, you know. So that's, for me, that's just smart filmmaking. It's like you're being, it's a producer's mindset, because you know what you have to do to get the commerce, to get the business side of it, while you're still trying to get to serve the art with that A camera, you know, trying to get it perfect. Let's do another take. But you've got your safety in the B camera for sure.
But also, because you understand editing, you can make those decisions on the set, right? Okay, well, I know I'm going to edit here,
for sure.
I'm going to go to this camera. So you're doing that as you're doing it. You're editing the movie as you're shooting it, right?
Oh yeah, always. And you know, and sometimes, you know, very rarely, like say, I mean, Extraction would be the first one that I, you know, had the chance to have final say. Very rarely that I have shot a sequence and then go like, none of the shots that I thought would be at work, and I got to use a B camera. I mean, it's happened to be like, wow, this is totally not working. And I thank God for the B camera. But most of the time I'm editing in my head. I know what I want. I know how it's going to work out. And then the other one is just in case. But what it, you know, is, and so it was really so interesting, and that reminds me of moments on set where people would be, you know, they'd be worried about like, oh, well, this guy got in my shot for this moment. And you're like, well, is a lot of egg here, or it's not working. And you just go, I'm not going to use it for that. I'm going to use it for this moment. That's it. We're moving on. And so that again is an efficiency and knowing the business side of things and how you're going to edit it, because you're, you know, directing and you're right there. You know how it's going to flow. So you can say, no, don't worry about it. I don't need to do that again. I saw exactly what I needed. It's going to be great.
So what we did here, this was a kind of a bit of a visual love story to Jackie Chan, because we knew we were going to have the Warner, which we worked on, and I think we actually shot it before this. so we knew that, and we wanted to, like, okay, we need, everything can't be a Warner, so how do we do this in a way that, you know, is kind of references other films and shows, you know, other skills. And so in here, we wanted to use props, you know, use editing where it just had a rhythm to it, and you know, show big gags, breaking things, breakaway. We used kind of all the tricks in this fight, like all of them. Like, you know, it may be subtle, and, you know, unless you break it down like piece by piece, frame by frame, you may not see all of them. But like, you know, rubber pots and pans, you know, we've got the foam on the refrigerator when it smacks the guy. You know, he's wearing a groin protector to get smacked in the groin. And to me, the storytelling in these fights, what's really fun is we use this guy, we called him the hose man, is he was like, Jackie did this very effectively. If you're fighting multiple people, you have some person, one of the fighters, one of the antagonists is kind of the anchor that you keep coming back to. And this was our guy. So he's one of the first guys. She takes out, you know, two guys early, but then he's one of the first guys that gets smashed. And then we kind of keep coming back to him. And it has this kind of comedic effect, but kind of a grounding effect, and it kind of really is effective when you're fighting multiple attackers. So that we use him, and he was also a good actor, and he had a great, great comedic face. But yeah, I love this scene so much. You could go on. It works, and you feel each one of these hits, like the refrigerator of the face. There's comedy, there's gags. We're using all of the tricks of the trade. We pulled all the stops out for this, like putting down, for this big, you know, taco hands-free fall to the back of the neck, we put down, you know, a high dense foam on the floor, and then, you know, had a print put on top of it that made it look like the floor, and then, you know, so it would be shiny. And then we had visual effects clean up a few of the, you know, the joining seams. And then, you know, this one, I love using rubber props when used correctly, can be so effective. Not only for the visceral impact of seeing something actually hit someone in the face, but the, you know, the comedy of, and in this particular instance, the comedy of a frying pan or like a pot to the head. Oof, that one. Okay.
Now, I love that we can laugh at someone else's pain, right? Like, as long as you know they're okay,
is he okay?
Laugh hysterically. Now, what was He was okay, and you know what's hilarious? The reason that one is, again, so funny to me is explicitly before that gag, we were like, okay, whatever you do, don't fall on your head. And, of course, he went right to his head.
Brilliant stuff, Sam. Listen, mate, I don't want to take up too much of your time because you're a busy man. I'm sure you're doing all sorts of stuff in this lockdown.
It's true.
No, I don't know. You've probably got loads of scripts that you're writing and whatever you're planning next. But I really appreciate you taking the time to educate our viewers on the art of action.
Well, thanks, Scott, for having me. It's a pleasure. I'm a huge fan of yours. Keep doing it, man. I love that you're doing this show. It's educating me. I've watched the episodes and I'm learning something every time. Hopefully, I have added to the legacy that you're creating with this show.
May, it's been great to watch you rise through the ranks of Hollywood. Keep doing what you're doing. Extraction, I'm not just saying it because you're my friend, was bloody brilliant. Can't wait to see what you do next.
Thanks, bud. Appreciate it.